A Moment of Destiny. Commentary for the April 8, 2023 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry. www.visitstillwaters.com. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates, or the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. Joshua 24:15. The essence of life is choice. For the young, those choices mean opportunities. For the elderly, they can mean regrets. Because we cannot see around corners, we tend to be drawn to what appears most alluring up front. When choices appear equal, we may rely heavily on experience, advice, and intuition. But when they differ in appearance, we find it easier to categorize them as good and bad. We are attracted to the choice that most reflects our own traits of character and personality. In other words, we project onto the choices before us our innate definition of good and bad, irrespective of the true character of the choices confronting us. This is why once we have made a choice, it is so hard to reverse course. We are not faced with a simple recognition of the error of our path. We feel that we are denying our own being in doing so. What was once a generic choice between two options has become closely tied to defining who we are in this universe. If our choices are always good, our commitment to them can be a good thing. But this is not always the case. When we err, a diehard commitment to that error cannot only threaten our future, it can hurt others we encounter on our journey forward, as they commit to our example. Even if we later choose to renounce that choice, there will be a powerful force willing to trap us in that commitment to justify their own errant course. This being the human condition, we can easily become pawns in a game we barely understand. By the time we figure it out, we may be old, licking our wounds, and feeling we lack the strength to commit to the right choice, even if we have the desire to make it. But nonetheless, we should find the humility to do so. This is wisdom. To remain in error in a vain attempt to save face is not. As the saying goes, there is no fool like an old fool. So few exceptions make the case for such an aphorism. Ironically, even as they force us to remain committed to our path as justification for their own poor choice, we find fewer and fewer of that ilk in our company as time goes by. The challenges created by their error, our error, forcing them to either accept the requisite untoward consequences or abandon their choice as prudence demands, leaving us alone on the deck of the good ship fate to weather the storm the evolution of our poor choice created. No more consequential choice exists than the one presented in the Bible, to serve God or not. The metaphor for our need to deal with that choice reveals itself in the story of Jesus' temptation in the wilderness. Jesus chose the less desirable path. The wilderness starkly portrayed the struggle that meant. The demands it made on his endurance, the demands it can make on ours, can make both weak. Human flesh was not intended to suffer like that, and those offering us more desirable choices know that. In Jesus' case, he was urged to turn back from his commitment, because doing so, choosing the alternate path, meant he could finally eat and sate the gnawing hunger he felt. But he knew that what seemed good initially could end up feeling like rocks in his stomach if he chose to abandon his path for short-term gratification. But the metaphor did not end there. Next, he was challenged as to whether the path he was on would guarantee his personal safety. But knowing that his personal safety was not the point of the choice he had made, he could turn away from the test to determine if the Father would ensure his safety. He desired to save the world if possible, and in doing so, his life would be forfeit, sealing the opportunity to choose into his contract with humanity. Understanding the true nature of Jesus' path, the tempter, Satan, then offered him what he most deeply desired, the world. But Jesus was aware of several factors that Satan was not willing to admit. When the world was created, humanity was given rule over the earth. Satan then usurped that rule by subverting the choice inherent in free will, just as he later unsuccessfully did with Jesus. He appealed to appetite. Humanity succumbed to that temptation and handed over rule of the earth to Satan. And it has been an ever-increasing hellish place since. Based on his usurpation, Satan offered the world to Jesus on the condition that he would legitimize Satan's rule. This would accomplish two things. First, it would irrevocably turn over the earth and humanity to Satan, since it would subvert God's plan for freeing humanity from such servitude. And second, since Jesus had taken on humanity to pursue that emancipation, he too would be forever servant to Satan. This is why Satan demanded he bow down to him as a taste of what that life would be like. But Jesus did not give in to him. He did not prevail earlier in his attempt to seize control of heaven, and Satan did not prevail now with the one who witnessed that earlier fall. Instead, Jesus continued on the path that eventually led to his death on a rude cross of wood erected outside of Jerusalem on a small hill, with thieves for companions crucified with him. Jeering crowds hurled every epithet and foul gesture at him as the life force in his body slowly ebbed. His last thoughts were that the Father not hold the ignorance of humanity against them. By their actions and words on that day, the people demonstrated that they would have chosen opposite the choices Jesus made when tempted in the wilderness. Many of those there had long ago sold their allegiance to the highest bidder to rule over others. Centurions, priests, had both sold themselves to that siren song. But it did not grant them the happiness they thought it would. Instead, they lived their lives in fear that someone else could take that vestige of power from them, unless they continued to abase and compromise themselves before those who had greater power. Fear controls everyone who chooses that kind of submission. Unfortunately, instead of exposing that fear for what it is, a means of manipulation by the one seeking to keep the earth in subjection to his rule, too many Christians want to use that fear themselves to manipulate people into choosing to be Christians, whether God is going to get you for that theology. Instead of presenting God as the best choice, based on love shown on the cross, love that draws people to make a better choice. They loved genocidal passages in the Old Testament and the Noahic flood that wiped out almost all life. They look forward to a God that upon Jesus' return will create rivers of blood from the dead as high as a horse's bridle. This sounds more like a grade B horror movie than the act of a loving God. Although John calls himself the disciple whom Jesus loved and wrote more about love than any other New Testament author, it is hard to reconcile the horrors of Revelation with John's gospel and his epistles. It is as though two different people wrote them. Martin Luther did not even want to include Revelation in his German Bible translation, as it contradicted so much of what John stood for. Admittedly, if we take the Bible literally as it reads, it is hard to find harmony between a God who is love, on one who is willing to kill millions, even billions, to achieve his ends. Paul must have struggled with it based on his argument that a potter has a right to do whatever he wants with the vessels he creates. The prophet Habakkuk also questioned how God could use evil means to punish others, finally falling back to the understanding that God is in charge. Just trust him. The problem with the portrayal of the character of God in the Bible is that, just like we do today, the biblical authors projected their desires, both good and bad, onto God. The saying is that if the ducks had a God, he would look just like a duck, only more powerful. We're a little different. When we anthropomorphize God, we make it far easier to keep him in that box where we can claim to fully understand him, for then he is just like us, loving whom we do and hating whom we do. Only our hatred is frustrated by our limited power over one another. He can get revenge that escapes us because he is above the law that prevents us mortals, so we project that hatred onto him. But there is a better choice. Love does not seek revenge, as so much of the book of Revelation seems to be about. Love is Jesus on the cross, with his dying breath, pleading forgiveness for those who are murdering him because they just do not understand. Those who would have us to do otherwise are not sheep of Jesus' fold, though outwardly their wool tries to make us believe they are. Thank you for listening to this podcast. You can find the written version of this podcast with the scripture footnotes supporting the ideas in this commentary at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. You can also find hundreds more commentaries and podcasts at that location. May God richly bless you and your family.